From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I am humbly incredible anchorman Bill Curtis. And here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Thanks so much. 2014 was such a terrible year, and yet it was over so soon. So even though it's now 2015, we're going to take one last look at some stories we never wanted to look at again.
People doubted that the American people could engage in a nationwide irrational panic about something that posed no real threat to them. But in the fall, we proved those doubters wrong.
All right, here is your first quote.
Oops.
That is the Calgary Sun, being kind of Canadian, as they talk about U.S. efforts to deal with what crisis?
The Ebola crisis.
The Ebola crisis! America is in the midst of an irrational panic attack about the Ebola virus. It's 24/7 on cable news. Even though 2 times more people in this country have been married to Larry King than have come down with Ebola. Maybe we should quarantine him if you're concerned about public safety. Ebola is extremely hard to get, as we all know, but thankfully our medical personnel are making it a lot easier. The Dallas hospital, which handled the first domestic case, managed to expose dozens of people to the disease, including 2 nurses who then contracted it. Hopefully, this should end the hospital's practice of ending each nursing shift by French kissing the patients.
Yeah, I might have my incompetent government agencies mixed up, but it seems like just a matter of time before Ebola jumps the White House fence.
That's true. Everybody was saying to President Obama, you have to take care of this. You have to show leadership. So President Obama canceled a trip he was going to go on to hold meetings to discuss the crisis. Well, of course, that's just an excuse. He doesn't want to go to the airport either. Somebody might have Ebola.
You know who I'm really worried about is Wolf Blitzer. Yeah, that guy hasn't taken a breath in 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
He's learned circular breathing. He can inhale through the nose while spreading panic with the mouth. I just want to say that this whole thing, this whole Ebola crisis, is a validation for those of us who spent all our time avoiding all human contact so we can stare at our phones. There. We're going to be the last. We're all going to look up at our phones and everybody else is going to be dead. And we're going to like, oh. Better tweet that to the survivors.
He's not an Ebola expert.
That was White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest talking about the man who the White House has put in charge of what?
Ebola.
Exactly right. The White House has given in to pressure and selected an Ebola czar, a man named Ron Klain. He has no medical training, but he has experience handling uncontrollable, dangerous outbreaks because he used to work with Joe Biden. The White House says that Mr. Klain, the Ebola czar, will be there in part to quell the panic about Ebola, but he will remain largely behind the scenes. Asked why he won't be out there with the public, the White House said, "Are you kidding? There's Ebola out there!"
Ebola czar sounds like a Venezuelan shortstop.
Ebola czar.
And you know, this will never happen. So, I mean, in another world, if a woman, God forbid, were ever chosen to, like, head something like this.
Wait, there's not never been a lady czar?
Of course not.
Wow, rude.
Of course not.
It would be
but
a czarina.
Call her a czarina?
No, I hope so.
A czarina.
If it was a child, it would be a czardine.
I've been sued lots of times before. Get in line.
Governor Christie was reacting, in his way, to a threat by one Casey Hickox, who was detained by the governor of New Jersey because he was afraid she had what?
Ebola!
Yes! You sound like you just found the Ebola virus under your Christmas tree, and you're delighted.
That was the happiest Ebola has ever made anybody.
It's true.
You know, and as a doctor, Katie, I think you should get in the habit of not saying that word that way.
Yeah. Ms. Hickox is a nurse. She was in Africa working with Ebola patients, and she was detained in quarantine when she landed in Newark because authorities said she was nauseated and feverish. That, of course, is a common reaction to suddenly finding oneself in New Jersey. So Ms. Hickox was held against her will over the weekend in a tent inside a hospital, which has the benefit of keeping any Ebola from spreading to New Jersey or any New Jersey spreading to her. She complained about the conditions. She said she had nothing to eat except hospital food and one takeout meal from Kentucky Fried Chicken. Governor Christie scoffed. He said she, quote, had food from the best restaurants in Newark, unquote. Here's the thing. They're both telling the truth.
And Peter, can I take this moment to say goodbye to all our listeners in Newark, New Jersey?
They know I love them.
Did you see what happened when she did go back to Maine? She took a mountain bike ride with her boyfriend and was surrounded by camera people and, you know, the news reporters. And it was the most bizarre scene because one of the networks had the presence of mind to take like five steps back.
Yeah.
And just film everybody else who was filming her.
Yeah.
And my thought was like, if she does have Ebola, she's going to give it to the right people. Yeah.
At this point, the governors, the authorities, Maine, New York, New Jersey, they're more panicked than the people. The rest of us are all getting over Ebola panic. One sign, the suddenly popular sexy Ebola nurse costume. Seriously, at least two companies were selling these up to Halloween. It's a short lab coat, fishnet stockings, and instead of a mask, it's a hazmat hood. You can't see the face, but it's got a stenciled message on it saying, sexy face inside.
You know, I met her once. And that wasn't true.
There you are. You can't believe what you read, Alonzo.
I'll survive. I will survive. Hey, hey.
But the Ebola virus wasn't the only controversial and, to some people, scary visitor to this country. And in November, President Obama put out the welcome mat for them.
I'm the President of the United States, not the Emperor of the United States.
Well, turns out he decided being an emperor, not so bad, as he announced this week that he was taking unilateral action about what?
Immigration reform.
Yes, indeed, immigration reform. Very good. Yes. The grand era of bipartisan cooperation we've enjoyed for almost an entire week is now over.
I didn't like it.
You didn't like
it? No.
Oh, those were the good old days last Monday. Thursday night, President Obama announced via, quote, presidential memoranda, changes to immigration policy allowing millions of undocumented immigrants to stay here and work, to beef up border enforcement. And just to really mess with the Republicans, he changed the national anthem to La Bamba.
I like the whole presidential memoranda stuff. Have you folks ever tried fixing things around your house by leaving little notes?
Oh, yeah.
How really? Is that
oh,
like,
yeah.
It's like, it's not so much a dictatorial action.
No, it's like,
a honeydew.
It's a honeydew.
It's a honeydew.
He left a little note on the immigration policy saying, guys, could you just fix this, please?
Right.
That's what he did. Yeah. Now, he followed up the announcement on Thursday with a speech in Las Vegas on Friday. That is, of course, a place known for good decisions. Yeah. And just to show he doesn't give a damn anymore, instead of having an array of citizens behind him in the podium, it was just a bunch of hookers and showgirls. Now, the Republicans, I should say, are furious. Mitch McConnell, the new Senate Majority Leader, says nothing that President Obama says in his speech will have the force of law because, according to the Constitution, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
That's right. Yeah.
Senator Coburn said there might be violence in reaction to this. A Republican riot. It means a crowd of well-dressed white people hiring Mexicans to turn over Mercedes and BMWs for them.
President Obama was only able to do such a thing after he thought he had nothing else to lose. because just a week earlier, he lost everywhere.
Here is your first quote.
This is a real ass-whooping.
That was West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin talking about the results of what? Don't tell her.
The election?
Yes, the midterm election. The last time a bunch of liberals got beaten this badly, they were being clubbed by the Chicago police. The Republican victory parties on Tuesday night were incredible. People were going nuts. Normally, the only place you see old white people celebrate like that is on Antiques Roadshow. Republicans won just about every race they were in the country. They took the Senate. They expanded control of the House. They are now going to take over all independent coffee shops, which will be transformed into combination Hooters and gun stores. I think, especially in Texas, efficient business model.
Sure.
I'd go.
And it also would, you know, there's a lot of flap over concealed weapons, so that would probably be addressed.
Yeah. Now, Mitch McConnell, Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, he, of course, will be the majority leader in the new Republican Senate. The pundits say that even though he has very little charisma, McConnell is brilliant behind the scenes. So now his maneuverings have got control of the Senate, the most hated institution in America. For his next trick, he's becoming Emperor of Syphilis.
Is that a real title?
Yeah. When we come back, our panelists deliver a bluff game we did not think anybody would want, and we become the Weather Channel. We'll be back with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Wix.com, giving business owners the ability to create their own website with the drag-and-drop builder. Learn more at WIX.com. American Jewish World Service, working in developing countries to end poverty and advance human rights. Information available at ajws.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much. 2014 was a year in which a lot of surprising things happened, but one thing everybody expected was that our panelists would lie to you regularly, without guilt.
In September, we played a game of Bluff the Listener that promised you something we thought no one wanted.
Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Chris from Bainbridge Island, Washington.
Oh, Bainbridge Island, right there across the sound from Seattle, right?
Exactly.
It's a great. We were just there. It's very beautiful.
Yeah, I had a co-worker went and attended the taping last week.
And how did they enjoy it?
They enjoyed it a lot.
Well, why didn't you go?
There's no good answer to that.
No, there really isn't. Well, welcome to the show, Chris. It's great to have you. You're going to play our game in which you must tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is Chris's topic?
Move over, Jeff Bezos.
Thanks to Amazon, you can order Pop-Tarts online and have them in your mouth within 4 minutes. This week, we read, though, about a new home delivery service we didn't know anybody wanted. Guess the true story of an unusual door-to-door service, and you'll win Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. First, let's hear from Tom Baudet.
Have you ever plowed through your in-flight meal and wondered how you could get airline food delivered right to your home? Well, a lot more people have than you might think. At least that's what Air Food One is banking their business on. In spite of being the only place most Americans have seen a biscotti, airline meals are famous for unoriginal, tasteless fare accompanied by exploding salad dressing packets and a half a can of Sprite. And now, for about $12, people who enjoy this kind of thing can have it brought to their front door, or the front door of someone they love. Are your aging parents complaining about the Meals on Wheels service you arranged? Give them a change of pace with Lufthansa Lasagna or Chicken Jet Blue. A week of that may grow new appreciation for Meatloaf Wednesdays and canned peaches. Air Food One and their partners say this is a good second market for food that would normally be thrown out. For now, because of their famously discerning palates, think boiled meat and cabbage, the service is only available for people living in Germany. The British are anxiously awaiting their turn.
Airline food delivered to your door without the trouble of getting on an airplane. Your next story of an unusual delivery comes from Shelby Farrow.
It's a bird. It's a bird. It's a bird carrying another bird. Yes, it's true. A new pet home delivery service has been unleashed by the Pets in Need shelter of Calgary, Canada, where your new pet will be delivered by one of the shelter's other resident animals. For the next few months, families can pick their new pet online and then put their feet up and relax as one of the shelter's furrier employees makes the delivery. It's sort of like when the stork delivers a baby, but instead it's a Labrador toting a satchel full of parakeets. We definitely hit a few snags at first, remarked shelter owner Glenn Horton, especially before we started putting the animals to be delivered into some sort of box or container. Sending the first few deliveries loose leaf was a bit of a mistake, turns out. A hamster can't balance on the shell of a tortoise for very long. And then there was the Tweety Bird incident. Let's just say we keep the feline and aviary deliveries separate now. But have you ever seen a miniature horse successfully deliver a family's new iguana? Warms the heart.
Pets delivered by other pets. Your last story of an unwanted package comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Heather Alexander of Austin, Texas, was waiting for a special delivery, and when a Tiffany blue van pulled into her driveway, she was pretty excited. Printed discreetly on the side of the van was the name Lou for You. I've been looking forward to this like crazy, she said. She tore open the box and lifted out a scrolled leather container. There it was, her artisanal toilet paper. Lou for You delivers the ne plus ultra of butt wipes. Made of handcrafted paper embedded with the fur of Angora cats. The sheets, nothing so rude as a roll, aren't just embossed with quilt-like patterns. They're literally quilted by a small army of Amish grandmothers. They feel like gossamer and wear like iron, says Heather. Oh, and a tailor comes and measures you. The fledgling company has taken off like a spicy meal, flush with success.
All right. There is a knock on your door, and one of these things might be waiting outside. Is it from Tom Baudet, a delivery of genuine airline food? From Shelby Farrow, a pet being delivered to you at your request by another, presumably larger pet? Or from Kiri O'Connor, bespoke artisanal toilet paper? Which of these is a real story of a delivery service we didn't know anybody needed?
Well, I think all of them sound extremely unlikely. But I'm going to go with Tom's story about the airline food.
You're going to go Tom's story about the airline food? Does that sound compelling to you?
No, but...
All right, then. We spoke to somebody familiar with the true story.
It allows people to order exactly the same food served on airline flights and have it delivered to their house and ready to be thrown in the oven.
That was Jessica Plautz from Mashable.com talking about Air Food One, the delivery service that brings airline food to people now in Germany that will probably spread to the United States unless we stop them. Congratulations. You got it right, Chris. You obviously earned a point for Tom because he told the truth, but more importantly, you've won our prize, Carl Castle's voice in your voicemail. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations. Thank you, Chris, so much for playing.
Thank you.
Highfalutin crowds with their foreign cars living in the clouds, shooting for the stars they can never see. Life the way it ought to be. Ooh.
You know the old saying, everybody complains about the weather, but nobody devotes a whole bunch of time in the radio to making fun of it? Not true. Here's our weather coverage from 2014.
Go home, Arctic. You're drunk.
That was Greg Layden writing at scienceblogs.com about the big what this week.
The polar vortex?
Yes, indeed. This was the polar vortex, a spinning cold air monster that usually lives at the North Pole, but as you heard, got drunk and stumbled down through Canada to fall asleep on top of us. It was colder in Chicago, this is true, than in Antarctica this week.
Wow.
The polar bear at the Chicago Zoo
really said, to hell with this, and went inside. And the penguin said, idiot, now they know we can talk. More true stories. With the wind chill, it was colder in Minnesota this week than it was on Mars. And the Mars rover was so not cool about this, it kept posting pictures of itself on a hammock. And you guys, of course, endured the worst of it in L.A., Paula
there
and
was,
Adam.
There was a moment.
Yeah,
there
I was in L.A. this weekend.
We came pretty close to having to put on pants at one point.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I actually bundle up during the winter, even though I live in Santa Monica, because in the morning, often it gets into the 50s. No, I'm telling you the truth.
Yeah. And there's, like, a breeze, too, right?
Yeah, because it's near the water.
The wind chill goes down to like 49.9.
Does that mean you have to wear your thermal sandals?
No, I do wear a thick sock, however, and
one.
Of course, a high-waisted cottony brief.
Oh, dear.
And people tried to have fun with this. One big thing, you know that trick? You probably saw it on YouTube, where it's really cold and you throw boiling water in the air and it turns to snow. True fact, at least 50 people across the country scalded themselves trying to do this.
Well, they didn't realize you were supposed to go outside. Right.
They threw it at one another. I thought it was going to freeze.
It was probably stuff like, you know, this
idea
like...
It's physics's fault.
It'll freeze faster if I throw it directly into the wind.
Have you ever been in minus 15 degree weather, Paula?
Are you kidding me? Yes.
You don't even have time to make up a plausible lie, do you?
I'll tell you something. Sometimes at the beach, we'll have a cooler.
Yeah.
And, boy, you reach in there to get a soda.
That's true.
And I got to tell you, whoo! You know what I'm saying?
It's tough, Paula.
Nippy pippy, yeah.
I understand.
You're going to let a glass ceiling hold you back? A glass ceiling? You're a hurricane for crying out loud. Just shatter it.
That was NPR's own Beth Novi giving advice for what particular kind of hurricane this week?
One named after female.
You're right. Very good. Hurricanes with female names. A study that came out this week showed that female hurricanes do more damage because people do not take female-named hurricanes as seriously as they do male-named hurricanes. You know, because we think of lady hurricanes as dainty things, just sitting around putting on makeup, reading Cosmo's 35 Ways to Obliterate Your Man This Weekend issue. But no, they're hurricanes.
Does it depend on the... I mean, Hurricane Lily is hard to take
as seriously
as, like, Hurricane, like, Bertha.
No, or, as a matter of fact...
which, of course, is a fat hurricane.
No, Hurricane Hildegard, you take seriously.
This is actually true. There's even a difference between the quality of names. If it's a particularly kind of girly name, you know, like Hurricane Miley, no one takes it seriously.
Right.
Hurricane Crystal with four Ys.
Yeah.
That just strips all the clothes off the people in town.
Hurricane Kesha. Yeah. That dollar sign.
That seems serious. So there are two solutions suggested for this problem. First, give hurricanes both names and nicknames. So it's Hurricane Tiffany, the devourer of worlds. And second, doing nothing, because anybody who doesn't get out of the way of a hurricane because it has a girly name deserves what's coming to it.
I was just going to say, though, at least female hurricanes will ask for directions and it will find you.
Yeah.
It will get to you. Male hurricane might just drive off, doesn't know where to go.
I've been up this coast before.
I got it.
All right, let's turn around, go back to the Caribbean.
I have GPS, I got it.
I would love to see a hurricane, like, pull into a bank and be like, she made me come in here. Where's North Carolina?
Mo, it's tough being in a relationship these days, what with Facebook, Twitter, and gay marriage, breaking up couples. Well, new research out this week says there's another threat to monogamy. What?
Oh, gosh. I mean, another threat to monogamy. The internet was alluded, includes, when you said Facebook, that's not that.
We have a microphone in Mo's brain.
I'll give you a hint. You could say it's an inconvenient truth about love.
Oh, global warming.
Yes.
Okay.
Dating site Victoria Milan asked 5,000 members if stress about the
heating weather would cause them to cheat. 72% said yes. The site's CEO says, summer loving is something everybody experiences when they're growing up, unquote. So basically watching the planet broil is going to make us all want to go neck with Eileen Greenwald under the boardwalk again.
Neck?
Wait, it's her, oh yeah.
Boardwalk?
It's not the March of the Penguins. It's the Walk of Shame of the Penguins.
Fracking.
Yeah.
Fracking. Fracking does sound
just
well.
Fracking.
Fracking. Yeah.
Ozone hole. Sorry.
We've just been reduced to saying things that are suggestive. Yeah. Fracking. Ozone hole. Drilling. Deep water horizon.
This just in. In 2014, famous people did stupid things.
Here's our celebrity coverage from 2014, including one story in which an actual board-certified celebrity, Miss Rosie Perez, joins in to comment.
Not real. My little ass is a lot cuter than that.
That was singer Ariana Grande responding to what big or little story about computer hacking this week?
The leak of a large number of pornographic pictures that had been hacked.
Go on. No, you're right, of course, yes. These are the hacked nude photos. We could have led the show this week with news from Ukraine or Syria, but those people are not naked. Somebody hacked into the accounts of Ms. Grande, Jennifer Lawrence, and several other well-known female celebrities and stole their private nude photos. The pictures were stolen from the iCloud web storage service, which many news services, including the BBC and Britain's Daily Mail, had to explain their audiences, not an actual cloud. Apparently,
yeah, actual clouds have even worse security.
It's true. But really, I mean, how could people were making this mistake? Apparently, British people were standing outside under storm clouds waiting for it to start raining boobs. The big thing we learned in this whole incident was not that celebrity accounts can be hacked so easily, but that apparently everybody takes naked pictures of themselves. I didn't know this.
I didn't either.
I did.
Is it just... I would have to have a touch of dysentery for a week, followed by self-tanner, before I would take a nude picture of myself.
Oh, I love those dysentery shots.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, have you ever taken a nude photo of yourself? Guys?
Maybe. No, I've always had that confusion whenever people video themselves having sex, because after I have sex, all I can think is, at least no one saw that.
That's the smallest comfort. Rosie, this week, an American hero named Andrew Chafari set a new world record when he paid $54.75 for a single item where?
Oh, my God, I know this, but my mind is blank.
Well, maybe you need something to wake you up, Rosie.
Oh. Was it the Starbucks coffee?
It was the Starbucks
yes.
coffee.
Nice.
Rosie, wait. Will you do me a favor and just say Starbucks coffee one more time? That is a thing of beauty.
Until this week, the most expensive drink ever ordered at Starbucks was the latte you had this morning. But this week, Mr. Chafari ordered something he invented and dubbed the Sexagintuple Vanilla Bean Mocha Frappuccino. It cost $54.75, breaking the previous record for most expensive Starbucks drink by a few bucks. Andrew's part of this subculture that likes to fill up their Starbucks loyalty cards, get you a free drink of your choice, and then they come up with the most expensive drink they can think of, right? It's a small, meaningless blow against a global company that probably could have any of us killed anytime they want.
Now, I think I read that drink had how many shots of espresso in it?
I believe 30.
Oh. So, do we know what he does for a living?
I believe he now stays awake for a living. He spasms. He works as an agitator in a laundry machine. He's just like,
if I can take my coffee break,
my coffee break. If I can take my coffee break, something within me dies.
Dies, Elvis, something within me dies.
If I can't make 3 daily trips where shining shrine benignly drips and taste cardboard.
When we return, it's the secrets of the Amazon, plus a tribute to the man who lent us his dignity, which we promise to return to him once we're done with it. We'll be back in a minute with more Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees to choose from, offered 100% online with 6 start dates a year. Learn more at online.asu.edu. The Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, working to improve the quality of people's lives by supporting the performing arts, the environment, medical research, and child well-being. Information is available at ddcf.org. And the Cy Sims Foundation, since 1985, supporting advances in science, education, and the arts towards a better life. More information available at cysimsfoundation.org. From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. And here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks, everybody. Hey, before we get back to our look at the best of 2014, we want to invite you to be a part of the best of 2015 at our upcoming show in Orlando, Florida on February 12th. Bill will be dressed up as his favorite Disney princess, so do not miss it. Tickets are at our website, waitwait.npr.org.
One of the things we loved doing in 2014 was playing this new game based on the online retailer that everybody loves and hates.
Right now, panel, it's time for a game we're calling
SecretsOfTheAmazon.com.
This, of course, is the game where you have to guess what else was purchased by people who bought something on Amazon. Today, we're going to ask you about people who bought books by celebrities. Get your question right. There's one for each of you. You get a point. Roy, you're up first. According to Amazon, people who bought Justin Bieber's autobiography, First Step to Forever, also bought which of these?
The Cliff Notes Guide to Justin Bieber's Autobiography, First Step to Forever.
Or
To Beeb or Not to Beeb, Justin Does Shakespeare.
Or
A 10-Yard Roll of Full Strength, Justin Bieber Duct Tape.
I think actually he did To Beeb or Not to Beeb. I don't know. To Beeb or Not to Beeb.
No, actually, it was the duct tape.
Oh.
Just the thing for the HVAC repairman believer in your life. Carrie, next one's for you. Actor and enigma James Franco recently wrote a book of short stories called Palo Alto. People who bought that also bought which of these?
The ultimate light-up flashing birthday tiara.
Or
Francophone, speaking the language of James Franco.
Or
The 127 Hours Home Game with Giant Boulder and Hacksaw.
Okay. I'll take the tiara.
You're right. It was, in fact, the flashing birthday tiara. I don't know why. All right, Charlie. This last one is for you. Keith Richards wrote a children's book. It's called Gus and Me. He has no recollection of writing it. But people who bought Gus and Me also bought what?
Heroin.
An advice book called What Would Keith Richards Do?
Or
Rolling Stones Certified Kidney Stones.
Or
heroin.
I will go with the advice book.
You're right. It's called What Would Keith Richards Do? It's a charming book of anecdotes and quotes called Keithisms from the Rockstar. Very good. We're going to end this review of the best of 2014 with a tribute to the best guy we know. Almost exactly 17 years ago, NPR listeners heard a very familiar voice say an unfamiliar thing.
From outside the newsroom, from way outside the newsroom, it's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I'm Carl Castle.
Carl Castle was the heart of this show, not to mention its spleen, liver, and hypothalamus. He bared his all, honest and raw.
I live alone with my cat called Pebbles. I've never been married, never been kissed. Oh, shame.
And sometimes his anger.
Man up and say I'm fat. Say it.
Sometimes his feminine side.
It's also been 2 years since I've even celebrated my birthday, and I probably did take my newfound freedom a little too far. Anyway, thank God for Victoria's Secret's new underwear line.
And, of course, his musical stylings.
You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever through the daytime, I get a fever all through the night. You give me fever.
Ah, we finally found Carl's Achilles heel.
I beg your pardon.
I thought Carl could do anybody.
Yes. Oh, I would ask for a redo of that, but it would be too cruel.
please don't, because I'm not going to be able to finish the show.
That, of course, was Carl's rendition of a song that will be forever associated with a performer. Another performer.
Not anymore.
That performer died just last week at the age of 81. Who was it?
Peggy Lee.
Yes. Carl, how did Lauren do in our quiz?
Despite some wisecracks from some members of the panel, Peter, Lauren did very well. She had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on her answering machine.
Excellent.
Will you sing it? Sing it.
I promise not to ask you to sing.
I think that Carl can start a whole new like genre of like outsider singing. You know what I mean?
You know. Hard listening.
Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, a fever all through the night.
But all wonderful things have to come to an end. So we began our show on March 8th of 2014 with this unusual quote from Carl.
So long, suckers.
That's right. After 60 years in broadcasting, including more than 30 years at NPR, including, of course, being this show's official judge and scorekeeper from the very first episode, Carl has decided to lay down the microphone and become our scorekeeper emeritus. He will record voicemail greetings for all our winners. He'll hang around the office, and he'll make sure we don't lower our standards.
As if that were even possible.
And Carl began his grand farewell tour. But even his impending retirement did not put a dent in his professionalism.
This winter, we're in for a deep freeze. And dogs won't go out to the trees. They hates indoor sports. And walks are kept short. That's why our poor dogs are...
Oh, God, in shorts?
No, I'm speechless because that, ladies and gentlemen, was a Chicago accent. And one more time, and listen for the rhyming words.
This winter we're in a deep freeze, and dogs won't go out to the trees. They hates indoor sports, and walks are kept short. That's why our poor dogs are.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I can't even, I don't even know what he said.
Yeah. Okay, it's a thick Chicago accent. It's a little difficult. The answer is obese. Okay. Our dogs won't go out to the trees.
Yes, yes.
According to Chicago vets, the polar vortex not only forced us to sit on the couch and watch every episode of Cake Boss, It made our dogs fat, too. We didn't want to go outside. They didn't get to go outside and run around with the other dogs. Fine, we all need to start losing the weight. But the real problem is all the presents the dog left under the bed are starting to thaw out. And then in May of 2014, at a theater in Washington, D.C., packed with friends, family, and fans, Carl performed his last show with Wait, Wait. Here's how it began.
But first, as many of you know, this is Carl Castle's last show with us before becoming our scorekeeper emeritus. We thought about doing an hour-long special of nothing but tributes to Carl, and we could do that, believe me. But we wanted to send Carl out the way he wants, by simply doing a good radio show.
Why start now, Peter?
You'll still be able to win Carl's voice.
And so we made our usual jokes and heard Carl do his imitations, but in a twist, we played some voices left on Carl's answering machine. Let's hear a couple.
Congratulations, Carl. Stephen Colbert here. Just saying what everyone else is thinking. All of us who loved you on NPR, all of us who listened for your voice every week on Wait, Wait, are so, so sad, sad. Gonna go. Best of luck. Send us some limericks or something. Very few things rhyme with Carl, by the way. I tried. The rhyming dictionary goes Carl, gnarl, and snarl. After that, it goes into bullshit like curl and seed pearl. You were dealt a rough hand when it came to a first name, I gotta say, when it comes to rhyming. How ironic. Is that what irony means?
This is Tom Hanks with a new Complete the Limerick game. Limericks are often a hassle. The punchlines can be rather crassle. We'll all miss the voice, but we have no choice but bid adieu to old Carl. I think it might be Blassel?
Between all the plaudits and tributes, we actually did manage to find a moment to let Carl do what he does best.
Hi, Peter. This is Corinne from La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Hey, La Crosse. I've been to La Crosse, home of the world's largest six-pack. Is it still there? Yeah.
Is Carl there?
Well, hold on. Let me check. Oh, yes. Carl's right here.
Right here.
I adore you, Carl Castle.
Oh. I love you.
No, I'm not breathing.
Well, Corinne, welcome to the show, Carl Castle. The man himself is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a big winner. Here is your first limerick.
Feeding rye grains to pigs isn't risky. At worst, they'll feel giddy and frisky. Our final intent is porcine ferment and pig meat that's flavored like...
Whiskey?
Whiskey, yes! Great news for alcoholics on the Atkins diet. Templeton Rye Distillery in Iowa is attempting to raise the world's first whiskey-flavored pigs. This sounds crazy, but it was actually the pig's idea. No, seriously, another shot will make me taste great. Here is your next limerick.
At the apex, I live life most fully. Made a wedgie machine with a pulley. Hand out nuggies and swirlies. Call names worse than girly. It's wonderful being a...
A bully.
A bully, yes! A new study from the National Academy of Sciences reveals that being a bully during childhood correlates to a lifetime of happiness, success, and vibrant health. It's true. All those atomic wedgies do wonders for upper arm strength, and stealing lunches mean bullies get all their food groups.
How did they conduct such a study?
I think they were bullied into those results.
No, but I mean, how do you, that's ridiculous.
It's such a longitudinal study. You follow people over their lives, and people who exhibited certain kinds of behavior they correlate to having healthier, longer, happier lives.
Wait a minute. So how did they find the bullies to begin with?
I believe they probably quizzed them on their behavior.
Uh-huh. So, like, when you get sent to the office in elementary school, you have to go talk to the people doing the study.
They're hanging out there.
You weren't going to call your parents.
You.
And and these people are going to follow you for the rest of your life.
All right, here is your last limerick.
There ought to be men's fashion courts to handle revealing reports. Our inseam now cinches to less than 5 inches. That's too much thigh shown by men's...
shorts.
Shorts, yes. The Wall Street Journal, the daily diary of American pants, broke the story this week that men's shorts are getting shorter.
It's very interesting. And this isn't funny, but it's true. The study shows that if you have like a really bad midsection, like a belly, you should wear shorter shorts to basically distract from that. Like if your belly is just hanging out all over, you should wear like tiny little short shorts.
No, you should.
Carl, how did Corinne do in our quiz?
Corinne, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or home answering machine.
Well done. Let's hear a couple more messages that got left on Carl's voicemail. First up, it's Katie Couric.
Wait, don't tell me. Carl Castle is retiring? Carl, just think, if you hadn't hired me as your intern at WAVA All News Radio after my first year at the University of Virginia, I don't think I'd be standing here in this studio. Thank you for giving a then-college student with big dreams her start, and thank you for being such a good person. I only hope by the time I retire, I'll be able to say I conducted my professional life with as much kindness, grace, humor, and integrity as you have. Thank you again for everything. Good luck, Carl.
And finally, a local call from the Washington, D.C. area.
Hi, everybody. This is Boy from Washington, D.C. Carl, for 30 years on Morning Edition, yours was the voice America woke up to. You brought us the news of everything from presidential elections to the fall of the Berlin Wall. We trusted you to tell us what happened and why it mattered. And then, for some reason, you joined a show where Peter Siegel makes you read goofy limericks and imitate everybody from Britney Spears to Barack Obama. It turns out they all sound like Carl Castle. Anyway, we're glad you did. Over the years, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me has become an institution in my hometown of Chicago and across the country. And, Carl, you've been its heart and soul. I will never forget my time on the show. A lot of people didn't know my name, but you guys were already making fun of it. So, Carl, congratulations on an incredible career and a well-deserved retirement. We will miss you, but it's good to know you won't be giving up everything. Who knows, maybe in a few years you'll get a call from another contestant, Barack from Chicago. And if I win, I'm glad you will still be
That does it for our year in review. Let's do everything we can to make sure 2015 is even stupider. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Pew Charitable Trusts, driven by the power of knowledge to solve today's most challenging problems at pewtrusts.org. The Ford Foundation, working with visionaries in the front lines of social change worldwide at fordfoundation.org, and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Goedeke writes our limericks, our house manager is Don Hall, our assistant house manager is Tyler Green, our web guru is Beth Novi. Our special thanks to John Zajac and Les Dolarczyk at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Miles Dernboss. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our CFO is Ann Nien. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Thanks to Bill Curtis, to all our panelists, our listener contestants, and of course, our scorekeeper emeritus, Mr. Carl Castle. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week with a brand new show. This is NPR.